Why do narcissists copy your personality as well as the personalities of the people around them? Is it a manipulation tactic? Do they know they're doing it? Have you ever experienced a narcissist who just won't answer your questions sometimes? So why don't they answer your questions? What does it mean? How can you tell?
Have you ever had a narcissist just up and disappear on you?
Well, I have a theory on this, and the answers to these questions might go a lot deeper than you probably think. Let's talk about narcissist codependency and mirroring. Narcissists have a way of copying you or mimicking you, or in some cases, nearly becoming you. And when you think about someone who's a narcissist using mirroring or copying, you probably think of the average narcissist. They kind of take on little bits of the identities of other people. But what you might not know is that this behavior, as annoying as it can be, is often the result of an early childhood issue caused by a lack of mirroring. And while narcissists manifest this by imitating the people around them, any one of us could be affected by the same issue, and we could be manifesting it through our own codependency. And yes, I'm quite serious, so let's talk about it. First, let's define what I mean when I say mirroring. It's the usually subconscious replication of another person's nonverbal signals. In layman's terms, it's when you reflect back the mannerisms, behaviors, and traits of other people. Because of mirroring, we adopt different facial expressions, body language, and even tone of voice in some cases. And for a lot of us, this leads us to empathy. As adults, we might use mirroring subconsciously as a way to create rapport with other people. And despite what a lot of people are going to tell you, mirroring is not necessarily a narcissistic behavior. In fact, it's a normal part of the development of humans. It begins as early as the day you're born and is a requirement for the normal development of babies, toddlers, kindergartners, etc. It helps them to develop their identities. But what happens when a tiny little human doesn't experience this important connection during infancy and early childhood? Let's talk about how the lack of mirroring in early childhood can affect you long term. As infants, humans will naturally adapt to whatever parenting we get. When our parent is depressed or anxious or stressed or even really distracted, a lot of times they don't give us the eye contact that we need. And in these cases, and in the case of a parent who might have narcissistic personality disorder, we are nearly doomed on a psychological level when we don't get the kind of connection we need for our brains to develop normally. See, there's published research out there that tells us that beginning when we're born and throughout our early childhood, regular eye contact with our mothers helps us to develop a sense of self. Now, I'm going to link a couple of those studies for you in the description below if you're curious. For most people, the natural time to give this kind of eye contact would be during diaper changing, feeding, other kinds of physical care for their babies. And you would think that it's sort of a natural thing for most people to look at their babies and talk to them or coo with them or whatever, right? Well, let's talk about good enough parents versus toxic parents. The thing is, most parents do this naturally, even parents who might be considered not good parents by the average person. But even when good enough parents do what comes naturally to them, babies and toddlers will reciprocate and even begin to initiate eye contact and stuff over time. They'll want to connect. But when our mothers have the problems I mentioned or any other issue that causes them to not focus while they're feeding us and caring for us, for example, the mother might not give us the contact that we'd so desperately have needed to properly attach to her. Well, this leads us to losing not only our ability to develop our authentic selves, but it also leaves us feeling instinctively like our needs haven't been met. That's because we are receiving this unconscious message that we don't matter. And later, if our mother is a narcissist, we learn that in order to have any value whatsoever, we need to meet her needs and the needs of others around us as a result. This type of perception manifests in us in a bunch of different ways, and it becomes a really big part of the core self we develop. It will, in nearly every case, affect our relationships in adulthood as well. We're going to talk about two extreme ways that a lack of mirroring can affect you in your adult relationships. Since the lack of mirroring in early childhood leads to you feeling unimportant and thinking your value comes from how you serve other people, you would naturally become more attractive to someone like a narcissist. You'll spend your life trying to make the people around you happy and take care of their needs in order to feel like you're worthy, and a narcissist loves people like that. Now, while you and I probably developed the disease to please if our mothers were unable to connect with us on this level, people who develop toxic narcissism or even narcissistic personality disorder are affected differently. See, when narcissism manifests, it's because those who develop it, well, they've developed the trademark lack of empathy of a narcissist as a result of having felt not understood, not appreciated, and not tuned in with their parent. So unlike those of us who became people pleasers, narcissists are unable to see others as whole people. They can't understand or appreciate the autonomy of anyone else, probably as a result of this. What's worse is that the lack of mirroring in infancy can lead to a really toxic legacy in your family. Because, for example, when a mother doesn't naturally mirror her babies, chances are she didn't receive mirroring in her own infancy and early childhood. As a result of that, unless she becomes self-aware and chooses to develop what's necessary to overcome this and intentionally change the pattern, she's not going to be able to offer this to her own children either, which leads to her trauma being passed on to her children. And this can continue in families for generations. It's really sad. How does narcissistic mirroring lead to copycat behaviors in narcissists then? Well, maybe you've noticed that the narcissist in your life has picked up some of your hobbies or ideas or even certain personality traits you might have. Your reaction might have been to kind of stress out and worry, and then you might have thought, maybe I'm reading too much into this. Or maybe you thought it was an amazing little bit of kismet that you'd finally met your soulmate the way I did. But by now you've probably realized, okay, I'm dealing with a narcissist or someone who might be a narcissist, and you're probably painfully aware that narcissists are manipulative. Mirroring, then, can be used by narcissists almost unconsciously as a manipulation tactic. And it can be used consciously, and is, by sociopaths and psychopaths who don't do it naturally as well. When adult narcissists use mirroring, though, they copy your behaviors, your mannerisms, your speech patterns, and your personality traits. It can be pretty extreme, and for a lot of us, a little disconcerting. Since narcissists feel like they don't really have any substance or personality, it's almost like they can't exist without being a reflection of someone else, or more than one person. As I explained before, this is likely due to that early childhood wound of not getting the kind of nurturing they needed on an emotional level. Their mothers often didn't give them the eye contact and recognition that they needed to properly self-actualize. So have you noticed how a narcissist will suddenly kind of change their personality or behavior over the years? I mean, it happens all the time. When you're in a long-term relationship with a narcissist, you're going to notice this, like a shift in their personality here and there. It'll happen various times throughout the relationship. Now, for the average narcissist, you might see a sudden shift in personality when they start spending time with a new person. Or if you're talking about a parent, they might even take on some of your own qualities, your habits, or your hobbies as you develop them. And probably this would continue into adulthood. Now, what's really interesting about this is that it can kind of be a tell for you if you really think about it. Because when they do suddenly change or shift and become someone else, a lot of times you can just look around at the people in their lives and kind of figure out exactly what's happening here. Chances are, in most cases, they're either jealous of someone and sort of trying to take on their qualities by mimicking them, or maybe they're obsessed with that person and taking on their qualities, behaviors, or mannerisms for that reason. There are a number of possibilities. But why do narcissists do this? Why do they mirror you in relationships? As you know, narcissists are very competitive by nature, and being in a relationship with one, it can feel like they really want to take your identity in one way or the other. And in the case of mirroring, they, like I said, almost become you on some level. Ironically, they will often find you attractive for whatever quality they eventually take on. And as the relationship progresses, you might find that you actually lose that part of yourself. For a codependent, this can be devastating and have lifelong effects if you're not careful. But what is the psychology of the mirroring behavior for narcissists in adult relationships? Well, there are several reasons that a narcissist might engage in mirroring with an adult in an adult relationship, including the following. Narcissists tend to kind of commit identity theft in a way. They don't really have a stable identity. And I'm not talking about identity theft like where criminals use your information to open up bank accounts and hurt your credit and whatnot. But narcissists aren't above that. So in general, I'm talking about the fact that they never established a real sense of identity growing up, thanks in part to the lack of eye contact and human connection in early childhood. So they might literally be attempting to sort of adopt your identity on some level. Now, they may also do this as a tactic in the beginning. Mirroring in narcissists also happens when they really want to win you over, kind of like a soulmate scam in a way, because they pretend they like and dislike the same things you do and kind of mirror your behaviors. Now, when you meet someone like this, someone who's so much like you, it might make you feel like I said, like they're your soulmate, and it might make you warm up to them more quickly. And narcissists know that. The third reason is to pretend they're being intimate. Narcissists are not by nature able to express true empathy. Certainly in some cases, they might be able to fake it if they need to, but generally, they don't have the skills or even the desire to have a real connection with anyone. But they need narcissistic supply, and in order to get that, what do they need? They need relationships. They logically understand that intimacy is important, so they pretend, and they learn to do this by watching your behaviors. In other words, they fake intimacy by imitating you. Now, while narcissists will stop actively mirroring you after the love bombing or idealization phase ends, they will also continue to hold on to whatever qualities or traits they've picked up from you, unless and until they find someone else to imitate. Why don't narcissists answer your questions? Have you ever found yourself in this situation wondering why every time you ask a narcissist a question, you never get a straight answer? I know it's extremely frustrating, to put it mildly. We're going to talk about why it is that narcissists don't answer your questions. Number one, they don't think you deserve answers. That's right, you heard me. They really do think you don't need or deserve the answers to your questions. This can be hard to admit to ourselves, but narcissists really don't see us as whole people, or at least they don't see us as people who are quite as real as they are. What I mean is that a narcissist sees you as sort of an extension of him or herself, and at the same time, they see you as somehow lower than or less than they see themselves. By giving you a straight answer, the narcissist would be acknowledging that you, in fact, are important and that you deserve to be treated like a real-life human. They would be honoring you as someone who they saw as an equal or even superior to themselves. Giving you a straight answer would essentially be acknowledging that you have feelings, thoughts, beliefs, and ideas, and that they are as important as their own. It would mean that they would have to have some level of empathy, and they just plain don't. Which brings me to my next point, number two, they really don't care how you feel. Like I said, narcissists don't have any empathy for you or anyone else. And even when they appear to care how someone feels, you can bet it's only because in that moment it benefits them to do so. Maybe they want something from you, or maybe they want to shut you up so they can go and do whatever it is they want to do. But when it comes to answering your questions truthfully or at all, it would require a certain amount of concern for your feelings, and narcissists can't go there if they're going to maintain the facade that keeps them going. And speaking of false fronts, this brings me to number three. They like it when you're confused. Narcissists don't answer questions because they really do like it when you're confused and uncertain. So rather than give you any sort of clarity, they either don't answer at all, or they only offer very vague answers. Or in some cases, they'll say something that is completely out of context. They might give you a little word salad, or they might straight up gaslight you. In any case, they want to keep you in control, and if you were feeling confused and uncertain, you're going to keep walking on eggshells around them, and that, my friend, is exactly what they want from you. And of course, this is also a way that they can hurt your self-esteem, because when they don't give you a proper answer, that is open disrespect. Which brings me to number four, they want to deflect and project. So when you ask a narcissist a question that feels like an accusation to them, they instantly go on the defense. If you ask them why, they'll tell you something like, I hate being investigated, or you're always accusing me of something. The truth is that narcissists won't answer questions that they deem accusatory in any way, even if they're not accusatory. For example, if you ask them, hey, how come you didn't put your dishes away when you were done? They might turn around and say something like, what are you saying, I'm a slob? Jeez. Then they might take it another step and attack you for being so mean to them, or point out all the times you didn't put your dishes away, or any time you ever let the laundry pile up. Or maybe they'll point out the fact that that one time 10 years ago they helped you out by washing your dishes for you. And then they'll ask you, how come you never do anything to help them, despite the fact that you literally bend over backward every day to make their lives easier? Before you know it, you'll be the one feeling guilty, begging them to forgive you for having the nerve to ask them to put their own dishes away, and that's again what they want. Which brings me to number five, they want to kill time. Yeah, one simple reason narcissists don't give you answers is that they have not yet figured out the good lie they're going to tell you. So in order to make time to dream up a real whopper, they stall so they can kill enough time to figure it out. They will keep stalling as long as they have to in order to come up with a believable lie. Or they just might stall long enough that you'll forget about it completely. At least that's what they hope for. After all, they don't feel the need to provide any sort of closure or satisfaction for you. And let's not forget that they are completely happy with leaving you hanging anyway, which of course brings me to my next point. Number six, they want to take over your brain. Narcissists love to see themselves as mysterious and fascinating. They enjoy the idea of you being laser focused on them and having to guess what they've been up to or wonder what they've been doing. This offers them the assurance that you're only thinking of them. They want to take up all the space in your head, and by not answering your questions, they feel like they're finally getting the proper amount of attention from you. You won't be able to think of anything else, they think, and that's just how they like it, which is one of the many debts they feel you owe them as their primary source of narcissistic supply. So how do you deal with a narcissist who won't answer your questions? Well, honestly, the best thing to do is to never expect a straight answer from a narcissist. Always take everything they say with a grain of salt, and don't hang your heart on the idea that they might one day be real with you, because they can't. Understand that narcissists will always do their best to leave you hanging and will never give you the answer that you need for the sake of their own agendas. This is both exhausting and painful if you're not careful. But when you can learn to see a narcissist for what they are, limitations and all, you can really empower yourself. Because when you understand what to expect from them and you can identify and label these behaviors, it can really take the sting out of some of it. It's a way you can reassure yourself that it really isn't you and that their manipulation and drama is always about themselves and their own issues. You, unfortunately, just happen to be one of the cogs in their toxic machine, at least until you figure them out.
So if you're dealing with a narcissist and you're dealing with someone who continues to disappear on you every time you turn around, they pull the disappearing act, they vanish, they're out of sight, there are some things to remember. So let's start off with discussing what it actually means to disappear. In the case of my ex-husband, he would usually come home late that night, sometimes the next morning. I would never know where he had been, and he would always be drunk and God knows what else was going on with him. He would have also stolen all the money out of our bank account, which back then, holy crap, was bad, because even though we didn't have very much money, he would almost inevitably be the rent money or the food money that I needed to pay the bills or feed the kid with. So that was a painful, difficult thing, and it's ultimately one of the reasons I ended up leaving him. But what in general does that mean? What does it mean when a narcissist disappears? Let's talk about it.
If I were to ask you, what is the opposite of love? What would your first response be? Hate? Here's the thing. It's not really hate. The opposite of love is actually indifference. And when someone ghosts you, you are experiencing indifference, or at least it feels that way. The emotional effects of this are incredibly devastating, and especially for people who already have low self-esteem, which, as you know, the narcissist has worked very hard to make sure that you have low self-esteem. Am I right?
And why does a narcissist disappear? What do you think? Let's talk about that.
I mean, don't you at least deserve a basic conversation explaining why this happened to you? Well, the fact of the matter is those people who do ghost, narcissists in this case, are doing so because they don't want to deal with your reaction to them saying, I'm out of here. They're avoiding their own discomfort by walking away from you and not talking about it. They aren't thinking about how it's going to make you feel, and they don't really care. Somebody will be moving along, having a life with a family, and then all of a sudden, boom, their significant other disappears, drops off the planet. It seems to be related to our current culture. That's what the narcissist tells him or herself. This is what everybody does. There's almost always a double life factor with a narcissist, whether it's cheating related or otherwise. But why do they do it and how do they do it? What's it all about? Let's start here. If we're honest with ourselves, we can admit that most narcissists seem to be looking for something. They're looking for supply. They're looking for love. Well, maybe a different kind of love than we're looking for. But they're looking for something, right? Sure, they might say they want love and caring and hope and all this stuff, but in reality, they feel very uncomfortable if they ever find anyone to love them, which is probably part of the reason you ended up where you are right now. Being in love with a narcissist is difficult, but for a narcissist, being in love isn't really the same as it is for other people. If they were really digging into it, if they were really trying to feel what love is all about, they would have to admit that they're terrified of it. And the reason, in my opinion, that they're so terrified is they're afraid that if they allow themselves to let go and love you for real, you might leave them. Almost every narcissist that I've ever known has had a serious fear of abandonment. And so they tend to doubt your authenticity. Even if you've been with them for 35 damn years, they tend to pretend that you're not authentic or believe that you're not authentically there for them. They devalue you because you love them, because they know they can never live up to anyone's expectations. They also think that other people can't live up to theirs. And the truth is, as we've talked about before, narcissists, they project their negative qualities onto you. We can look at this from a few different angles. First of all, love feels unsafe to a narcissist, and that's why it seems like they're always looking for a better supply. They prefer to be admired, because to them, admiration feels safe. It's earned. You see, it's earned, whereas love is given, even though in my opinion, love is also earned a little bit. But since the narcissist earns admiration through, in their opinion, their different, you know, experiences and their different credentials and their different accomplishments, they feel a lot safer being admired. And that is part of the reason that some narcissists do the whole double life thing. They want to seek attention, as we all know, but also admiration from a wide variety of people. They would rather have a whole bunch of people admire them than be loved by one person. The fact is that narcissists live in a big, fear-filled mess of a world. They're always afraid of being exposed. They're always afraid of being abandoned, and they're always afraid of losing control. This leads them to kind of live in a constant fight or flight mode. So they're always on the defense.
They're always unable to let their guard down. And as a result, they don't really find themselves attaching to people in a healthy way, which means that inevitably they destroy the relationship. Some people will say it feels like a punch in the gut or in the face. Some people feel insulted. There's a huge lack of closure that happens with this. I hear this from a lot of people. Eventually, you can move on, but of course your self-esteem is completely pushed into the ground before that happens. In some ways, the worst part of it is you never get broken up with. You never get the closure. You realize that that person didn't even consider you worthy of a conversation. Devastating. Why does it feel so bad to go through this? Well, I'm going to tell you something really interesting about the human brain right now. Being rejected in a dating situation or any kind of social situation, it actually activates the same part of your brain as physical pain. Studies tell me that you can actually reduce emotional pain with Tylenol. What about that? In addition to this link between biological pain and emotional pain, there are certain specific factors that contribute to psychological stress that happens in this case. For example, being ghosted gives you no idea how you're supposed to react. I mean, it's completely ambiguous. You don't know to be worried if something happened to this person. You don't know if they're hurt and lying in a hospital bed. You don't know if you should be angry or upset. You don't know if they're just suddenly busy. You don't know what happened to them. And because you don't really know what happened, your brain doesn't know how to react. Being connected to other people has always been important to the human survival. This goes all the way back to the cave person days. In order to survive, we needed to have a group of people. We needed to have a mate. We needed to have people we were close to. Because of that, our bodies, our minds have developed a system that watches for social cues. We monitor our social environments without even knowing it, to look for the cues to tell us how to behave. Because our social cues are happening around us and we are empaths, we are very hypersensitive to those social cues, we would normally know how to behave accordingly. But because of the fact that we don't know what happened to this person when they went away from us, they ghosted us, we don't know how to act. And that messes with our heads in a big way. It creates a sense of emotional distortion or dysregulation. We feel out of control.
In some cases, the narcissist will use the silent treatment as part of the disappearing act. Take a look. Here's an example of how the silent treatment kind of happens in a relationship. So our couple is going to be called Jack and Jill. Jack's a narcissist. Jill is his victim. Lately, she's noticing that he's going out all the time. He's not responding to her when she calls him. She feels really upset, neglected, anxious. So she does what most everyone would do, and she tries to talk to him about it during the next time they're together. Well, at that point, he pretty much tells her she's full of crap, overreacting. He says, "I'm done. I'm going out. That's it." He leaves. He goes out with his friends. He gets drunk. She tries texting him. He sees the texts but does not respond to them. Later on, she brings it up again, and he basically ignores her, gives her the silent treatment, doesn't respond to her. And at this point, she begins falling. She's falling. She is getting sicker. She is getting more upset. She is feeling more alone. And he keeps going out and getting drunk. So she decides she's going to try something new. She starts Googling stuff. She comes up with this amazing idea and she thinks, you know what? Maybe this is really going to work. I can talk to him. I can fill him in. I figured out this is exactly what he needs to hear. So she's got a plan. But will it work? She isn't sure. So the next day, Jill decides she's going to have a discussion with Jack and she thinks he's going to see the light. Very quickly, she realizes this doesn't happen, and she's back in tears. Meanwhile, Jack has nothing to say about it. He's quiet, confused, you know, innocent. Next thing you know, he's on Facebook talking about how terrible his life is, and all of his little flying monkeys are comforting him and feeling sorry for him. And meanwhile, here's Jill over here holding the responsibility for this quote-unquote problem in their relationship. This is the silent treatment. In case you aren't aware, the silent treatment is just another way that the narcissist attempts to control you. It is a form of emotional abuse, and it's usually used by narcissists or people with narcissistic tendencies. It is all about putting the narcissist in the position of being in control of the situation, and it's designed to help the narcissist make you shut your mouth, as in to avoid you asserting yourself or having any opinion whatsoever. In some cases, they do it in order to increase the conflict, make it more difficult for you, avoid resolving the conflict because that makes you uncomfortable and they like that feeling. Sometimes it's about not taking personal responsibility or not making a compromise. And in many cases, it's about punishing you for something that they think you did wrong, like a perceived ego slight. Of course, what happens is very often exactly what they want to happen. That's, they get a reaction from you and they feel like they are in control of you. So you obviously, you're an empath, you understand how to deal with people, you have the ability to compromise, a strong conflict resolution skill set. You probably in general don't even enjoy conflict. So during the time that the narcissist is being silent, you're probably trying really hard to get in touch with them, to figure out how to fix what happened, try to make them understand you, just like Jill did in our example. But of course, this is generally met with contempt, disdain, more silence, completely ignoring you, whatever. And basically, this makes you feel like you're nothing, like you're so insignificant that you don't matter, or that you and your issues become less and less real, more and more non-existent for the narcissist. Of course, that makes you feel like you're not good enough, like you have nothing to offer, like everything's your fault. And before you know it, you might find yourself apologizing to the narcissist, even though clearly, you're not the one that should be apologizing. Most narcissists are about as emotionally mature as a toddler or maybe up to a 5 or 6 year old child. They kind of pout. They don't want to play with their friend in the sandbox. They fight with their friends on the playground. They decide they don't want to share their toys, whatever. It's the same kind of thing. And just like a 5 year old, like we've talked about recently, a narcissist acts just like a child emotionally. They might refuse to talk with you, angrily storm off, and then you are left feeling like, what in the heck just happened? I'm confused. I'm rejected. I don't understand what the heck just happened. It's the same deal with a child on the playground. But in this case, since the narcissist gets to decide whether or not they're going to talk to you or give you a quote-unquote chance, well then there's this false but strong sense of control. So the narcissist will then demand that you apologize for whatever it was that you may have done, some BS made-up transgression, or maybe just the fact that you had the nerve to, I don't know, set a boundary or ask for equal treatment. Sometimes this makes the narcissist want to abandon you, and then you start the discard phase. And this is when you might start actually presenting an ultimatum and say, look, this is it, I need to know, yes or no. So then at that point, the narcissist might decide to end the relationship rather than actually admit being abandoned. Because they might think, well, now you've set this ultimatum and you're saying you're going to leave if we don't fix this, and so I'm just going to leave you instead.
Ghosting doesn't just ask you to question the relationship that you were just in, but it also causes you to question yourself, and this is the worst part of it. You ask yourself, why didn't I see this coming? What could I have done to be a better judge of character? I was too smart to miss this one. What did I miss? What did I do to make it happen? How do I not let this happen to me again in the future? Should I just never trust anybody again? It's really one of the most basic psychological systems we have in place as human beings. And it helps us to not only monitor our own standing in the world, but also it affects our feelings of self-worth, our feelings of self-esteem, our ability to believe that we're worth anything in the world. When we're rejected, our self-esteem goes to the ground. It drops tremendously quickly. That makes us feel like we don't belong anywhere. It makes us feel alone. If you have experienced ghosting, especially if you've experienced it more than once, this is something that is intrinsically connected to your own personal psychological self. It might take you longer to get through this than it would someone who had higher self-esteem, because you're going to have less of those connections like we've talked about before. The neurotransmitters aren't going to be connecting like they should be. You have less of the natural opioid painkiller stuff released in your brain, see? And after a rejection, this plummets. And especially for people who have lower self-esteem, it's incredibly painful. And like we talked about earlier, the narcissist has worked really hard to make sure your self-esteem is on the ground. Ghosting is like the silent treatment on steroids, okay? And psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health professionals, they're going to tell you that this is like the ultimate form of emotional cruelty. It basically leaves you powerless and gives you no closure. You can't ask questions. You can't find out what was going on. You can't get any sort of information that would help you to process this experience effectively on an emotional level. It stops you from being able to react in any healthy way at all, and it prevents you from expressing yourself, your emotions, from being heard. It's really important that you can do that in order to maintain self-esteem. So what are you supposed to do to get through this mess? I mean, the fact is that regardless of what the narcissist intended to do, they ghost you because they're being passive aggressive. Whether they know it or not, they're going to leave psychological scars on you from doing this. Obviously, they don't really care if they leave scars on you. They just want to make sure that whenever they're ready, they can come hopping back into your life. And that might be part of the reason they ghost. I once had a narcissist ghost on me, and he spent a holiday and several days around the holiday away from me, and then showed back up in the middle of the night at my house and was very upset that I wasn't sitting there waiting for him, and made up a big lie story about how he had been arrested and all this other stuff. Of course, I never saw any proof of that stuff. So how do you move forward? What do you do next? The first thing you have to remember is that when someone does ghost you, it literally says not one thing about you personally. It has nothing to do with who you are. It has nothing to do with how lovable you are. The fact is, you're lovable, my friend. You're worthy. And even though it feels like somebody walking away from you like that means you're worth nothing, that's not true. It really says a lot about the person who did the ghosting. It says a lot about the narcissist in your life. It shows they don't have the courage they need to deal with the issue of walking away. And I think it's more than courage, it's gumption. It's they don't want to deal with the discomfort of saying goodbye to you. They don't want to give you the opportunity to say goodbye to them or to say your truth to them. Either they don't understand it or they just don't give a damn. In either case, you're left hanging, wondering what to do, right? But what it all comes down to is that their message is, I don't have what it takes to be a real live grown-up. I'm not mature. I'm not responsible. I don't care how you feel. But here's my thing. If somebody ghosts you, I would consider it an opportunity, especially if that person is a narcissist, an opportunity to take back your life and start doing things the way you want to do them. I know it's painful, and I know you're sitting here going, what the hell are you talking about, Ange? But I'm telling you right now, if you are ghosted by a narcissist, I want you to change your mind. I want you to consider it a blessing. Think about all the people who are still fighting to get away from a narcissist for 30 years, 40 years, and they're still stuck there because the narcissist keeps them in that little ball. If you've been ghosted, I want you to look at this as an opportunity and a gift. I want you to block the narcissist. I want you to proactively become no contact. I don't want you to tolerate one bit of this from anybody. I want you to use it as an opportunity to move forward and away from the narcissist. Even if you know they're coming back in 3 or 4 days, don't tolerate it. This is unacceptable behavior for anyone in a relationship.
So when you put it all together, what it all comes down to is that the narcissist is mostly concerned with what the narcissist wants. And when you feel so desperate to know where they are at every moment, that's like supply for them. If you call their phone 150 times and you text them 150 times and they're stressing out and, oh my gosh, this woman won't leave me alone or this man won't leave me alone, that's supply for them. Any emotion that you give them is supply for them. So I'm going to tell you something in my personal opinion. If I knew then what I know now, what I would do in a situation like that is I would not react to it. If you want them to stop treating you that way, stop reacting to them when they do that. Act like you didn't even notice they were gone. Act like you have no emotion about it. Do not respond emotionally. It's going to be difficult, nearly impossible. Do your best. That will be the only way that you can potentially change the behavior. And the truth is, if you're dealing with someone like this on a regular basis, maybe you need to think about moving on and stepping away from that person and even just go to be somewhere safely without them, by yourself or with just your kids, so that you can heal and be with people who actually do deserve someone like you in their life. And maybe that means you just love yourself a little harder than you ever have. It's worth a try. Take care of yourself. Know that you're not alone and know that you have support if you need it. Join this family. Let's get connected.
So what do you think about this? This brings me to the question of the day. Question of the day.
Question of the day.
And the question of the day is, have you ever encountered a narcissist who wouldn't answer your questions? And how did you handle it? Have you experienced a narcissist who copied your identity? And if so, were you kind of surprised by the answers I shared today on why that happens? Or did you already know this? Do you agree or disagree with my theory?
Have you had a narcissist disappear on you before, pull the vanishing act? And if so, how did it feel to you and how did it turn out? And what advice would you offer our fellow survivors who were also going through a similar situation?
Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you here and here. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.